on Thanksgiving to see if I can't tune in a few both local and non-local broadcasts to catch that context.
You can report
see,
back
see how it's there, and I can.
I'm too exhausted after compiling my list, so I just.
This is 90.7 FM WGXC. You're listening to Japantha. Meet you later from Bits, Lines, and the
Sounded like a seagull, turned out to be a siren, but not the good kind, red and blue swine. I've got too many problems, they never seem to end. It all depends on what you call a problem, and when you reach your ending, will Peter be demanding one more question?
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Patty Boom, host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown. All kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
Hi, everybody. This is Timmy Whippoorwill calling to you live from inside the oak tree. Please give what you can to wgxc.org/donate. Check it out. Their webpage is live. It's fresh. It's exciting and new. Even us here in the Whippoorwill community approve of such a place. WGXC is here for you, so why don't you be there for them?
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars? Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
A radio network, an empire upon an empire.
I make no promises.
You on the mark.
With one purpose only, to point out and make public the dishonesty. Now in complete control of the government of this state.
There's only one man who can rid the politics of this state of the evil domination.
Hello.
I'm Tom Rowan. You've tuned into the WGXC local news. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Mid-Hudson News is reporting that a group of Hudson Valley Democratic Party chairs has written to longtime state chair Jay Jacobs, asking him to implement 4 common sense reforms to increase Democratic operations, provide robust support for county committees, expand and diversify the voices involved in decision-making, and strengthen the party's infrastructure ahead of the next election cycle. The general election this month saw mixed results in the Hudson Valley, ranging from successes in Ulster and Westchester counties to, quote, disappointing outcomes, unquote, for statewide candidates in several counties, as well as the loss of state legislative and congressional seats previously held by Democrats. Last week, 2 letters were circulated, one calling on Jacobs to step down from his party leadership role, and the other from county chairs offering their continued support. The members of the Greater Hudson Valley Coalition declined to sign on to either letter. That group wrote their own letter to Jacobs asking state leadership to convene a session of the State Democratic Committee's Executive Committee before the end of the year to present, discuss, and adopt a plan to implement their reforms. The letter is signed by Columbia County Chair Sam Hodge, Lori Turgeson of Greene County, Michael Dupree and Julie Shiroshi of Dutchess County, and Kaylee McKenzie of Ulster County, and others. Read more about the story at MidHudsonNews.com. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that a Greenville property owner has stepped forward to donate a 5-acre parcel to the town for the construction of a new rescue squad building. The town board unanimously on November 21st voted to approve the contract. Quote, the person has property on Irving Road, unquote, Town Supervisor Paul Macko said. Quote, they want to donate 5 acres of property for the town of Greenville to build a rescue squad building. They're basically donating the 5 acres for $1, and we will cover all the closing expenses, unquote. The town has declined to identify the donor. The Greenville Rescue Squad and the town entered into a new 5-year contract on November 9th, which included plans to construct a new emergency services building for the squad. The town has been considered a plot of town-owned land located behind the Greenville Public Library, but Macko said the Irving Road site is better situated to house the new structure. The property behind the library, quote, would have been a tough place to get in and out of in times of emergencies, especially with parking at the library, unquote, Macko said. Quote, I think the Irving Road property will afford us much safer and quicker conditions to get in and out, unquote. Town officials also established a building committee consisting of town board members John Benson and Will Von Atkinson, plus a couple of rescue squad members, to work through the details of the project. The building is expected to cost somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million, Macko said. Town attorney Tal Rapplier said he will start the process of acquiring the parcel. Read more about the story at theupstater.com. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul on November 23rd nominated attorney Kaylin Whittingham to serve on the Commission on Ethics and Lobbying in Government, the successor entity to the now-defunct Joint Commission on Public Ethics. Whittingham is a former president of the Association of Black Women Attorneys and the principal of her law firm. Her nomination will be subject to a review by a committee of law school deans before her appointment can be finalized. The panel is composed of appointees by the governor, attorney general, state comptroller, and legislative leaders from both parties in the state Senate and Assembly. Hochul previously nominated Michael Cardoza and Frederick Davey to serve on the panel. Both appointments were confirmed by the Independent Review Committee. Quote, I am pleased to nominate Ms. Whittingham for the committee's review and look forward to continuing our work to support the commission's efforts to restore trust in government, unquote, Hochul said. Good government organizations this week urged the final commission appointments to be made so it can begin its work in earnest before the start of 2023. Read the full story at newyorkstateofpolitics.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Biden must demand freedom for Alaa Abdel Fattah. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast, Cairo, Egypt. There are dictators in the world who wield absolute power. Then there are U.S. senators. Very few understand the power these 100 individuals hold in the world's most powerful country. A single senator can effectively block any legislation. They don't need to give a reason and often do it entirely in secret. President Joe Biden, who is a senator for decades, knows this and also knows he needs the vote of every Democratic senator to pass critical appropriations during Congress's current lame duck session. Democratic Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy, the longest-serving senator currently in office, is retiring on January 2nd after 48 years. He's been a champion of human rights, authoring the Leahy Law that denies U.S. aid to human rights-abusing regimes. Senator Leahy or one of his colleagues could make a vital difference and save lives by blocking any bill in this session that shores up human rights abusing governments. Take Egypt. The U.S.-backed Egyptian dictator, President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, rose to power after a military coup in 2013. His image is omnipresent in this sprawling capital city of 20 million. On buildings, lampposts, and across the mass media, which is effectively controlled by the state. More than 60,000 political prisoners are locked up here. The true number is unknown. The most prominent is Alaa Abdel Fattah, a writer, technologist, and leading activist in the 2011 Arab Spring Revolution that overthrew Egypt's previous long-standing U.S.-backed dictator, Hosni Mubarak. Yet Alaa, a dual Egyptian and British citizen, has been in prison for most of the last decade. His case received global attention when Egypt hosted COP27, the UN climate summit in Sharm el-Sheikh. Alaa had been on hunger strike for more than 200 days at a desert prison. As COP27 began on November 6, he escalated his protest, refusing to drink water altogether. Last week, Alaa told family members in their first prison visit in nearly a month that he suffered a near-death experience that week. The German chancellor, the French president, the British prime minister, and President Biden had all raised his case directly with Sisi. Prison authorities medically intervened secretly to avoid the crisis his death during COP27 would have provoked. The Sisi regime survives largely thanks to massive support from the United States. Egypt receives $1.3 billion annually in military aid, with an additional $125 million plus in economic aid. Egypt has long been the second highest recipient of U.S. foreign aid after Israel. Its support is delivered through annual congressional appropriations, subject to verifiable compliance with human rights standards. The U.S. State Department oversees this massive aid package with the Pentagon. As part of the process, the State Department is required to produce a human rights report on Egypt. Its most recent 72-page litany of horrors includes extrajudicial killings, forced disappearances, torture, and cruel inhuman treatment, life-threatening prison conditions, and arbitrary detention. The list goes on. While any rational reading of the report would result in the denial of aid, the State Department routinely invokes a national security waiver, authorizing the aid despite the rampant abuses.
You train their police officers. You train their army officers.
That's Leila Swaif, Ala Abdel Fattah's mother, a math professor and renowned activist in her own right. She was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour during an exclusive interview with her daughter in their family apartment in Cairo.
This whole operation is a U.S. operation. The helicopters they use to track people in the desert, this is a U.S. This whole CC thing is a U.S. security operation. But it really, yes, the U.S. can decide if they want to, that they want the regime to do this and not do that.
Ala's family has been tirelessly advocating for his release at great risk. His youngest sister, Sana, 28 years old, has already been imprisoned for over 3 years for her activism.
The U.S. has stakes in that regime, stakes in that oppression, and so has responsibility.
That's Sana Saif speaking on Democracy Now!, sitting next to her mother.
It's not leverage. Leverage is as if you're not a stakeholder in this. You are part of this, and you are a big part of this. You send $1.3 billion of military aid to Egypt every year.
President Biden was photographed with Sisi at COP27 laughing with the dictator. Sisi has also been invited to next month's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit at the White House. Like any Western-aligned autocrat seeking legitimacy, Sisi is reportedly seeking a one-on-one meeting with Biden. President Biden should work for the immediate release of Ala Abdel Fattah and many more Egyptian political prisoners before granting Sisi a plum White House meeting. Meanwhile, Senator Patrick Leahy, as one of his proud last acts in office, along with other senators, should block further Egyptian military aid until Ala is free. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan in Cairo, Egypt.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Saturday should be sunny with a high of 50 and a west wind 9 to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour, a low around 33 Saturday night. Sunday, the forecast is for rain. There's a 90% chance with a high of 45 and a wind from the south of 5 to 9 miles per hour in the afternoon. Sunday night, the rain continues. There's an 80% chance with a low around 39 and the south wind around 8 miles per hour. Monday, there is a slight chance of showers before 1 p.m., a 20% chance. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 45, a low around 27. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration. But most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support. WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to Transmission Art and Experimental Sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
It is the summer of the year 2004 in America, and the president sits erect inside the Oval Office. He suffers from a terrible headache.
It hurts me bad, real bad.
He stares at the daily intelligence briefing for the war on terrorism and tries to think, but a single sentence drones in his skull like a loud shout in a deep and empty canyon.
All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
A hungry worm chews his troubled memory like a chainsaw twisting in a rotten stump. It is a worm born way back in October 1886. On a prison train that transports a defeated band of Native Americans into exile and captivity. They are the last of the Chiricahua Apaches.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous savages who beat their wives.
The ragged band of Chiricahuas travels under the leadership of a man known and feared throughout the Southwest as Geronimo.
Ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra, ra, che, ra.
Within a few months, many of his tribesmen die of malaria and malnutrition. But Geronimo becomes a prime tourist attraction and performs in a Wild West show where he is billed as the worst Indian who ever lived.
Yippee, 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 yippee.
In 1905, at the age of 80, he rides at the head of Teddy Roosevelt's inaugural parade, and on February 17th, 1909, Geronimo dies on an army cot inside Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and is buried in the so-called Apache Cemetery. Fast forward to the year 1968. In Paris, students and workers perform an attractive blend of revolution and copulation in pursuit of a new social order, while over in a distant land named Vietnam, elite American troops hunt an elusive enemy named Victor Charlie.
L'imagination au pouvoir!
Meanwhile, in the New England city of New Haven, inside a dark building known as the Tomb, a member of the Yale University class of 1968 undergoes initiation into the secret order of the skull and bones.
Do you do do?
I do do do.
Is it new do do?
It is new do do.
Is it true do do?
It is true do do.
At the solemn climax of this ritual, the novitiate dances a waltz with the most prized artifact in the order's vast collection of human bones, a skull named Geronimo.
Cheetah, 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 doo-doo-da, dee-da, dee-da, doo-doo, da, dee-da.
Not every new member gets to dance with the worst Indian who ever lived, but this particular student could claim a birthright, for his name was George W., and his grandfather, Prescott Bush, himself a prominent Yale bonesman, had stolen the skull in a nocturnal raid on Geronimo's grave, while he, Prescott, was stationed at Fort Sill in the year 1918.
Well, you see, it is a tradition, Raleigh, that every new bonesman will secure at least one celebrity skull.
Thus performing sacred bonesman duty, Prescott snatched the skull, together with a few other bones, doused them all with carbolic acid to remove desiccated bits of nerve tissue and cartilage, and returned with his booty to Yale.
Aye.
So that generation after generation of Yale-y bonesmen might peek into the hollow sockets and snicker and chuckle and snort.
Hey, check this out, dude. It looks like some kind of skull. I mean, I think it's some kind of Indian skull.
Prescott Bush would later become a big bucks booster for a charismatic Austrian named Adolf Hitler and profit handsomely from investments in the Nazi war machine. Investments made in association with his father-in-law, George Herbert Walker, who admired Hitler's innovations in the transport and disposal of genetic undesirables.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous savages who... Where are you?
Now we jump ahead to the year 2000. It's the early days of W's battle for the presidency, and due to certain potentially damaging leaks from Yale classmates, the W campaign decides that Geronimo's purloined bones have become a political liability, and the order is given to make the problem disappear. Incinerated as medical waste and flushed into Long Island Sound, or ground to a fine paste and ingested by veteran bonesmen as a remedy for their enlarged prostates.
Well, heck, it sure worked for me. I feel like a young buck riding on a Mustang. Yeehaw! Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Fast forward again to the summer of 2004. Wildfires smolder in the Hollywood Hills, while in countless foreign lands, elite American troops pursue the enemies of freedom.
These are not Christian people. They are dangerous.
In Washington, the president sits erect inside the Oval Office and attempts to focus on the daily intelligence report for the war on terrorism.
It hurts me bad. Real bad.
He has a nasty headache from a hungry worm that turns in his brain like a steel reamer in the root of a collapsed tooth. A worm that soon makes psychokinetic contact. The worm tells the president he must travel by train to Oklahoma, to a place called Cache Creek, outside a dreary military facility named Fort Sill. Over the strenuous objections of his closest advisors,
"Please don't go, Mr. President. Pretty please don't go. Pretty please don't go."
The president goes. Then the worm tells him that he must remove all his clothes and kneel naked in front of Geronimo's grave. And so, over the weeping and wailing of First Lady Laura W. and his daughter Jenna W., and to the great mirth and merriment of the International Press Corps, the president strips butt naked and falls to his knees his pale bottom bidding farewell to the big red sun.
Farewell, big red. Farewell, big red sun. Farewell.
Watching television inside his secret bunker, Osama bin Laden thinks to himself, that would not be a respectable posture for a Muslim man. While in Paris, Jacques Chirac releases an official statement on behalf of the people of France. The worm then tells the president that he must sing a healing song dedicated to the headless spirit of the worst Indian who ever lived, with whom he, George W., had once danced cheek to cheek, and that this song must be composed from the sounds of the name Geronimo. Despite a last-minute plea from his vice president, Dick Cheney, the president begins to sing. As this picture beams around the globe, the whole world stops and stares at George W., naked, on his knees and in the dirt, singing a healing song straight into the grave of the worst Indian who ever lived. And in all the cities, and in all the markets, and in all the war zones, from Nepal to Jerusalem, the air becomes suddenly quiet and still, while the President of the United States of America sings and sings and sings.
Mommy wish, Jerry Mooney.
Amino, Amino, Reji.
Mani Reji, Jerry Mooney.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs has been in business since 1972. They operate out of a mean, one-story building nestled in front of a defunct factory on Niagara Falls Boulevard. The parking lot is cracked and worn, and the sidewalk in front of the door has nearly returned to dirt. The windows are covered by weather-beaten cardboard, and the sign out front was melted by a lightning strike.
Oh, yeah, man, that place has got the haunts. Nobody goes in, nobody comes out, but it's always emanating, like, smell of like, hot, fresh pizza and blood.
Says Ronnie LaHoyt, who owns and lives above a knives and puzzles shop across the street from Devil's Hole. So what the hell is up with this place? Is it haunted, as locals like LaHoyt believe, or is it just bad? I am Zach L. Keebaugh, investigative reporter for Channel 9 Buffalo WZTV News, and I aimed to find out.
You're watching Channel 9 WZTV News Buffalo. Channel 9 WZ. Channel 9 WZTV special feature.
First, though, I had to get out of my motel room. Easy enough, right? Not so fast. The door of my room was one of those hingeless doors, the kind that uses tape instead of hinges. Every time I tried to open it, I could feel something heavy pressing down on the other side.
mattresses.
Mattresses.
Somebody piled 3 or 4 mattresses in front of the door. They were wet too, man. They smelled like waterfall water. Anyway, it took me 20 or 30 minutes to squeeze my way out of a thin space I managed to budge between the frame and the door. Then I knocked the mattresses to the ground where they flopped into a puddle. It was depressing. A guy came around to clean the parking lot, and when I asked him about it, he replied,
"What mattresses? I don't see no mattresses."
"Dude, there are mattresses stacked up right here," I responded.
"I have no idea what you're talking about,"
he said, and continued unloading trash from his trunk into a pile on a wheelchair ramp. Anyway, I arrived at Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs at lunchtime. The small, poorly lit seating area was completely empty. Pieces of newspaper littered the floor. It felt like no heat had been on in the place for ages. There was no counter, merely a ragged chasm in the brown paneling that offered a view into the kitchen. A pulpy, middle-aged face suddenly appeared in the breach.
"Let's have a pie. Make it a large and rib sub too," I called out.
The pulpy face nodded very slightly and then disappeared. I took a seat and looked over the ancient laminated placemat. There was a little maze on it. You had to lead the pepperoni through the maze to the pizza on the other side. That was cool, and it occupied me for a while. It was then that I became aware of complete and total silence. Nothing moved through the chasm. It was the absence of sound that stunned me. It was an absence of life as well.
"Blood.
They have killed their customers," it suddenly occurred to me. "The ovens are inoperable. There will be no pizza. There will be only the end.
This is your denouement."
"Yo!" I called out. It was desperation more than anything else. The pulpy, expressionless face returned.
"Yo, are you making that pizza? That rib sub?"
I started backing away towards the door. I could feel the thin strands of sunlight as I drew closer. The pulpy face said nothing.
"Relax, Zach," I thought.
I breathed. I stared at an old Niagara Falls pennant. It was from the Canadian side. A Mountie was saluting the falls. Calm me down a little bit.
"Say, how about a Loganberry?"
"Mattresses."
And then a bag was pushed through the chasm. The bottom was covered in grease, but there was something inside. It was the rib sub, and, as I unexpectedly found out later, the pizza too. An entire pizza pie shoved into a paper bag. It was eldritch, this pizza, made by phantoms. I threw a 20 at the chasm. Some change somehow appeared immediately, followed by a 2-liter of Loganberry in a styrofoam container.
"All right now, enjoy your meal,"
the chasm said. The pulpy figure was gone. I looked at the chasm. It grew suddenly gray outside. Nothing further was coming, I knew it. I thought about approaching, thought about trying to get a glimpse into the kitchen, but there was just no way, man. It was over. I had to accept it. The chasm had accepted it. I took one last look at the pennant, and it was gone. Nothing but cracked brown paneling. The pizza was good, though, and so was the sub. That's what you should take away from this. For Channel 9, this is Zach L. Kibau, reporting.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those 3 weirdos who work there?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, a few thoughts about navigation through fog. Fog, or loss of visibility, puts the coastal navigator to the supreme test and requires precautions at sea that are all too often neglected. Fog fills the most experienced seamen with uneasiness and may paralyze a beginner with unwarranted panic. A timorous navigator confronted with a fog-bound situation should remember that centuries of mariners have found their way through seemingly hopeless conditions to find eternal illumination.
Julia, India, Kuwait. Chico La Rosa. Delta Mundo. Pescado. El albo. La corona.
All departures and arrivals are expected to be. Please remain seated and refrain from cigarettes.
Cigarettes are not permitted.
All departures and arrivals are expected to be erratic. Please remain seated and refrain from cigarettes. Wish to communicate? All departures and arrivals are expected to be erratic. Please remain seated and refrain from cigarettes. Wish to communicate? Communicate?
Seated and breathing calm.
Please remain seated at all times. Cigarettes are not permitted. Panic is not permitted. Remain watchful as the danger increases. There is no reason for panic.
Erratic
behavior is not permitted.
Fog may thicken gradually, but it is more likely to approach as a low, gray bank of clouds that may blot out landmarks or other vessels before it descends upon the ship. Sometimes foghorns are heard before the fog itself appears, and at night the unexpected disappearance of previously visible lights may mean fog. When in fog, place lookouts where they can both see and hear. Cut out extraneous social chatter. Sound the foghorn regularly, and examine the chart for bell or whistle buoys. Advise passengers that foggy conditions are normal. Panic is not permitted in any quarter of the vessel, above all when the need to communicate remains acute.
I think you'll do very well indeed. The first time is not necessarily the hardest, believe me. Fact. All right, get set, both of you. Here comes the count. 5 seconds. Countdown. Stay loose, Lieutenant, but don't let your eyes wander from those instruments.
Right, sir.
30, 29, 28, 27, 26.
You will enter in now,
25, 24.
Generator going.
23, 22, 21.
Slow down on your engine.
The decision must now be made whether to continue the voyage, seek harbor, or drop anchor. Fog involves grave risks, and the safety of the vessel and its passengers must be the skipper's foremost consideration. Remember that the anchor is part of the navigator's kit, and that quick fingers keep the smart head full of future chowder. Charlie's out there playing golf. No. bloody victor in sight. Yea, der bush, yea, der cradle, yea, der x-ray, yea, der mic. I can never find the way without an echo, without a light. Oh, Nabal, feeling so friendly, feeling foxtrot Zulu Stein. Lima Kilo, Lima Tango, ganz allein.
Oh, darling. I have to look at it somehow. Adverse conditions. What does that mean? Whiskey und Herren Charlie, bitte bleiben Sie sitzen.
Sell cigarettes at the Hotel India, Mike. They do. They sell cigarettes.
Cigarettes?
It's not permitted. Smoking's not permitted, but they sell cigarettes at the Hotel India.
No. Selling is not permitted. Cigarettes are not permitted. They sell whiskey.
Whiskey is normal.
It's not permitted to be normal.
Do not be afraid, Mike. We will now soon arrive at the hotel.
I need to get to the hotel.
Cigarettes will be available continuously.
I need cigarettes.
Whiskey will be available at the hotel.
I need
continuously,
whiskey.
Continuously.
I need to communicate.
Continue.
Bravo. I need to communicate.
Bravo.
I need to communicate.
Bravo.